Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 3 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered low testosterone by age, what's normal at 20, 30, 40, 50, and beyond. Today, we're getting into low testosterone prevalence. Is it rising in young men? Last episode, the main idea was that testosterone changes with age, but not in the cartoon version people carry around in their heads. A healthy man does not usually fall off a hormonal cliff just because he had another birthday. That matters, because once you understand that, the obvious next question is whether we are actually seeing more low testosterone in younger men, or whether younger men are simply getting tested more often and talking about it more online. The answer, annoyingly and usefully, is both. I get this question every week, usually from a guy in his late 20s or 30s who is tired, foggy, not recovering in the gym, not feeling like himself, and wondering whether his generation got handed a worse hormonal deal than the one before it. Sometimes he is right. Sometimes he is just sleep-deprived and overworked. Sometimes both. The mistake is thinking you can settle that question with one random lab value. You can't. Male hypogonadism is a clinical syndrome. It requires persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence on proper testing, not vibes and not one bad Tuesday afternoon result. The strict population studies tell us symptomatic hypogonadism affects roughly 2 to 6% of men between 40 and 79, and new cases show up at about 12 per 1,000 men per year. Those numbers sound lower than many people expect. Part of that is because the diagnostic bar is appropriately high. In the better studies, men were not counted just because they had a low total testosterone once. They needed symptoms, and they needed low testosterone on repeat morning testing. The strict population studies tell us symptomatic hypogonadism affects roughly 2 to 6% of men between 40 and 79, and new cases show up at about 12 per 1,000 men per year. Those numbers sound lower than many people expect. Part of that is because the diagnostic bar is appropriately high. In the better studies, men were not counted just because they had a low total testosterone once. They needed symptoms, and they needed low testosterone on repeat morning testing. The strict population studies tell us symptomatic hypogonadism affects roughly 2 to 6% of men between 40 and 79, and new cases show up at about 12 per 1,000 men per year. Those numbers sound lower than men. Part of that is because the diagnostic in the better studies, men were not counted just because they had symptoms. And they
That leads to the next piece. Low testosterone is not distributed evenly across men like rain on a weather map. It clusters in certain groups. In real practice, the men with the highest rates are usually the men carrying metabolic stress. More abdominal fat, more insulin resistance, more disrupted sleep, more medication exposure, more early blood pressure and lipid problems. The old story was that testosterone falls because men age. The more accurate story is that testosterone often falls because men accumulate disease, and now that accumulation starts earlier. This is where the term functional hypogonadism matters. Functional means the hormone system is suppressed, but not necessarily broken. The testes may still be capable of producing testosterone. The axis from brain to testes is just getting muffled. Think of it less like a blown engine and more like a thermostat turned down too low. In those men, LH and FSH are often low or inappropriately normal for the testosterone level. If LH is high and testosterone is low, that points toward primary hypogonadism, where the testes themselves are failing. If LH is low or normal and testosterone is low, that points toward secondary or functional hypogonadism, where the signaling problem starts higher up. That is why I keep repeating LH and FSH. Without them, you cannot classify the condition, and without classification, you cannot choose the right treatment. We'll spend a full episode on this next time, because it changes everything. For now, the short version is that a man with high LH and low testosterone is often a TRT patient. A man with low or normal LH and low testosterone, especially if LH is below 8, may be an enclomaphen patient, because the testes can still respond. That is common in younger men with functional suppression. If fertility matters, that distinction matters even more. One of the more useful lessons I learned after residency was that I used to overcredit age. I was wrong. Healthy aging does cause some decline in testosterone, but the decline is usually gradual and modest. Longitudinal data show that weight change, obesity, and lifestyle factors strongly modify the hormonal picture, often more than age alone. In clinic, I have men in their late 60s who are lean, active,
active, sleeping reasonably well, and hormonally doing better than men in their mid-30s who have sleep apnea, a lot of visceral fat, a stressful job, and 5 hours of sleep on a good night. Age matters. It just does not get to take all the credit. So is there a real generational decline? I think the best answer is yes, but probably. One landmark American study showed a population-level decline in serum testosterone that could not be explained by aging alone. Men from later birth cohorts had lower testosterone at the same age than men from earlier cohorts. That is a different question from whether one individual man's testosterone declines as he gets older. Of course it can. The cohort question asks whether entire generations are starting from a lower baseline. The evidence suggests they all.
A car analogy helps here. Age-related decline is your car getting older and wearing down over time. Generational decline is newer cars leaving the factory with smaller fuel tanks. Different problem. Same driver frustration. Now, testosterone is not the only signal pointing in that direction. Sperm counts are not interchangeable with testosterone levels, and I do not want to blur that distinction. But a major systematic review found sperm counts dropped by more than half over the past several decades in men from North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. That does not prove a one-to-one testosterone decline. It does support the broader idea that male reproductive health has been under pressure across generations. What pressures? It is probably not one villain in a black cape. It is a pileup. Environmental exposures are a credible part of the story. Reviews in this area point to endocrine-disrupting chemicals, such as BPA, phthalates, PFAS, and certain pesticides as plausible contributors to worsening male reproductive health across the life course. Add sedentary behavior, ultra-processed diets, higher obesity burden, chronic stress, and less sleep, and the axis gets hit from several directions at once. Sleep alone can do more than people think. A small but well-known JAMA study found that just 1 week of sleep restriction reduced daytime testosterone in healthy young men. I see versions of that every day. A guy in his late 20s says he feels old, but when you look under the hood, he's sleeping 5 hours, lifting hard, drinking too much on weekends, eating like an intern on overnight call, maybe taking a medication that affects libido or the axis, and carrying 25 extra pounds, mostly around the waist. He is not imagining the symptoms. He also may not have permanent hypogonadism. He may have a suppressible system that has been pushed for too long. That is why I do not like the phrase low T epidemic, unless someone is being very precise. It is not that testosterone itself is mysteriously vanishing from the planet. What is happening is that the conditions that suppress testosterone are showing up earlier, sticking around longer, and affecting more men. And yes, more testing is also picking up more cases. Online men's health platforms, direct lab access, and simple awareness have changed behavior. 15 or 20 years ago, plenty of young men with symptoms never got tested. Now they do. Some of the rise in diagnosis is detection. If that were the whole story, though, we would not keep seeing age-matched cohort data trending downward in later generations. Another reason prevalence looks lower on paper than it feels in practice is that a complete evaluation is still surprisingly rare. Many men never mention sexual symptoms because of stigma. Many clinicians order only total testosterone. Many order it at the wrong time of day. Some stop after one lab. Some never check free testosterone properly. And a lot of people still use lab reference ranges as if in range automatically means healthy for that patient. It doesn't. At Viedma, when symptoms persist, we use 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone as decision thresholds. It's around 350. Well, 350 nanograms per deciliter, to be exact. We use direct free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LCMS/MS. We do not order SHBG as a separate test because we are not estimating free testosterone from a calculation. We are measuring it directly. Our core panel includes total testosterone, free testosterone, estradiol, LH, FSH, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, and PSA in men 40 and older. When indicated, we add lipids, prolactin, TSH, and vitamin D, more than 40 biomarkers, twice per year, or a structured review of existing outside labs if a man already has them. Sometimes those outside labs come from broad testing platforms like Function Health. The gap is often not lack of data, it is lack of the right data. There is also under-recognition of structural causes. Klinefelter syndrome affects about 1 in 500 to 1,000 men, yet fewer than half are ever diagnosed. That fact tells you a lot. If a relatively common chromosomal cause of primary hypogonadism is missed that often, then milder functional disease is going to be missed constantly. Published prevalence is a floor, not a ceiling. A lot of guys hear that prevalence is only a few percent and think low testosterone
must be rare, but the strict numbers reflect strict rules. Symptoms plus repeat morning labs. That is appropriate. It also means men who never finish the workup do not exist in the statistics. A lot of guys hear young men can have low testosterone and assume that means every tired 26-year-old needs testosterone shots. No, that is not how this works. Young men can absolutely have clinically meaningful hypogonadism, but the cause matters. In younger men, the pattern is often secondary or functional. That means low or normal LH and FSH with low testosterone, often tied to obesity, sleep loss, metabolic stress, or medication effects. In those men, enclomiphene is often our first line when LH is below 8 because it helps stimulate natural testosterone production and preserves fertility. TRT is reserved for men with primary hypogonadism or men with secondary hypogonadism who do not respond adequately. Starting TRT casually in a man who wants fertility is one of the more preventable mistakes in men's health. A lot of guys also think one low total testosterone result settles the matter. It doesn't. Symptoms matter. Timing matters. Free testosterone matters. LH and FSH matter. One lab value without context is like reading the gas gauge while the car is parked on a steep hill. You can glance at it, but you should not redesign the engine around it. And then there is the just lose weight advice. Lifestyle work matters. Of course it does. But in real life, men do better when lifestyle change and proper medical evaluation happen together, not as opposing religions. If a man's axis is functionally suppressed, we treat the actual physiology while also working on the drivers. So what should you do with all? First, if you have persistent symptoms, do not try to diagnose yourself from one random. Get a proper morning draw, ideally between 7 a.m. and 11 a.m., and repeat it when you need.
Second, make sure the panel is complete enough to answer the real question. That means total testosterone, direct free testosterone, LH and FSH at a minimum. Without LH and FSH, you cannot tell primary from secondary hypogonadism. Third, pay attention to context, waist size, sleep, medications, alcohol, recovery, metabolic health, and stress are not background noise. They are often the story. Fourth, choose treatment based on cause, not on internet enthusiasm. Functional and secondary hypogonadism often call for a different first move than primary hypogonadism. Fertility plans matter. Testicular function matters. Future options matter. That is why this series builds step by step. If today's episode was about whether the problem is becoming more common, the next one is about where the problem starts. And once you understand that, the treatment conversation becomes much less confusing. Next time, we'll get into primary versus secondary hypogonadism, where the problem starts, and why it changes everything. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to Viedma for free or order labs through our special offer at Viedma.com.
Low testosterone, or hypogonadism, is more common than you might think. While the symptoms don't appear overnight, they can impact a person's life significantly. The AAGP study, or American Gay Male Aging Study, found that prevalence of low testosterone rates in men between 45 and 74 years old were 14.5%. That's about 1 in 7 men. And nearly half of those men, or 47%, had absolutely low testosterone, meaning they had levels below the lab threshold. A second study, or a WHO study, found that prevalence of low testosterone rates were over twice as high, to 32.8%. That means 1 in 3 men. And in China, prevalence of low testosterone rates were over twice as high, to 49.6%. That means 1 in 2 men. While the AAGP study, or American Gay Male Aging Study, found that the average testosterone level was over 500 nanograms per deciliter, and the WHO study found it to be more consistent with the average population, around 650 nanograms per deciliter. That's established in the AAGP study by the use of standard industry laboratory results, and the WHO study found it to be more consistent with the average population, around 650 nanograms. That's established in the AAGP study by the use of standard industry laboratory. The WHO.